Hello and welcome to Design Untangled with me, Chris Mears. I'm joined today by an old colleague, an old boss. Were you my boss or line manager?
Whichever one you like to say.
Yeah, all right, we'll say line manager. Andy Farmer, hello.
Hello there, Chris. Good to see you.
Yeah, can you start maybe by telling people a bit just about what you do and your background?
Okay, fine. So, first of all, I work for a company called ORM. We're a digital agency consultancy who work down the road in the Oxford Circus. And we help clients achieve their digital freedom by creating products and services for them that help them do their business better, helping them save money by being more efficient through digital, helping them grow their clients through growing sales, revenue, learning more about their customers as well through better data and better insight. So all of those things. I'm responsible for the solution consulting practice at ORM. So they are strategy consultants, experience consultants, technology consultants, data people, basically people who help create and scope the roadmaps for the products and services that we create.
Cool. So the reason we got you on today is to talk about transport and trains specifically, which everyone loves, of course. Yeah. Do you want to tell us a bit about some of the work you've been doing? You've worked with a lot of train companies,
sure.
I know.
Yeah.
And yeah, just tell us a bit about what you've been up to.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, we're reasonably still small outfits, 110 of us. So we specialise in certain sectors or certain industries, of which one is transport. We've been working in the transport sector since about 2013.
Mm-hmm.
First company we worked with was GWR, which was First Great Western at that time. And when we started working with them, it was initially some website analytics work, some experience design work, some stakeholder sort of communications around emerging strategy. But sort of since that time, the last 5 or 6 years, we've expanded our remit sort of quite significantly. And we provide an end-to-end digital service for train operating companies. So that can include helping a rail business develop its digital strategy and its transformation program up front, and creating a business case for change to help improve the business case. And then we help them deliver those plans by developing and managing digital platforms and products. So the platform would normally include a customer-facing service like journey planning and management, e-commerce, journey purchase capabilities, customer identity management, account management, perhaps sometimes a promotions engine and back office management for all of that. We'd also sometimes include management reporting and hosting and infrastructure.
Yep.
So what the customer would see is most usually an app or a wearable or a website, but there's a whole lot of technology integration that goes underneath that and data management. So in a technology parlance, we'd probably be called a systems integrator. That's what a number of the operating companies that we work with would call
us. So how do those engagements start? Do they come to you essentially saying we need a completely new platform to do everything differently, or do they come to you with like a single problem and then it kind of expands into, well, actually you need to change all these things?
Yeah, good question. It can be both. So with GWR, as I mentioned, we started off quite small. It was a couple of initial projects, and then we grew our remit through experience design into strategy and then took over the technology.
Right, yeah.
For other companies like Arriva, they were looking for a supplier or support to help them develop a customer experience or proposition of front-end, back-end management. And we help them initially create the business case for that and then develop it. In case of other franchises, because especially in the sector, we know when the bids are coming up, and we obviously have relationships with a number of the stakeholders, so we will be in the mix for a number of those opportunities. So it's a whole range of different ways that business might come to us.
Yeah. For the ones that don't come kind of initially with the view that they sort of need to transform their whole business, is that like a big surprise to them that actually to deliver this better customer experience they need to do that, or is it kind of something that creeps up on them slowly, I guess?
Yes, that's a good question. I mean, typically a number of the companies that we've worked with in the past, they might come with a tender or a bid going, we want a website or we want an app, and they're thinking that they're getting an off-the-shelf product that might be akin to a piece of hardware that they might purchase, like a train carriage. And obviously, it's not always as simple as that, because a digital product or platform has to integrate with several, sometimes scores of different types of data, from journey management, from ticketing, from fares, journey update information, multimodal planning, it might have to deal with loads of legacy systems as well. Quite often, the train operating company thinks that the app has all of those things included in it, where in fact it is actually a bunch of different data points, and the app or the website is just the customer-facing bit that you or I see.
Yeah.
And you have to do all those integrations no matter what the touch point is. So yes, it's not always as straightforward as well.
Yeah, it's always the challenge, right? You get these projects or kind of brief switcher, just we need a new app to let people do XYZ, but the things you need to let them do that are a lot deeper than just, you know, you need a form here or whatever, like what does that form link to and where is it pulling data from and what technology has it got to integrate with?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, what the customer might see, what you or I might see, you might see a shiny new website with some nice imagery, but that frankly is the easy bit, because it's just content and images. It's the data that supports the journey, supports the fare, supports the updates, the disruption information, that's the difficult thing to do. And
yeah,
that doesn't always sit within a web CMS.
Yeah, that's the beauty of service design, I suppose, isn't it? Making the complex seem simple, at least to the customer.
Exactly.
So you've obviously worked with quite a few different train companies now. Mm-hmm. Like, what are the common problems or issues that you're seeing across them?
Well, there's a couple of areas. I mean, you know, we look at it from a business point of view and a customer point of view.
Yeah.
As a customer, as a traveller yourself, you're probably very well aware of some of the the issues. Obviously, poor train service is one. From our point of view, there's not necessarily anything we can do about a train not turning up on time. If you look at the sort of purely digital part of the equation, there's frustrations around unclear and inflexible ticketing and pricing.
Yeah.
Inflexible fulfillment methods. Lack of what we call multimodal capability as well, so the ability to plan the entire journey from train to bus to walking and see what the fastest, the cheapest is. And then journey information being incomplete or inaccurate or not up to date. Those are some of the key things. It's basically stuff that gets in the way of someone completing their journey in the way that they want it to.
So given that probably the number one complaint is my train isn't here on time, I guess there's only so far digital can go in terms of actually making that person's train experience good, right? So you can kind of fix all the secondary problems, but if their train doesn't get there on time, you know, it's still going to be a bad experience.
We can mitigate it in terms of having up-to-date information and, you know, perhaps being ahead of the game, and quite often some of the touch points that we create, especially if there's Wi-Fi on the train, the customer will know more about whether there's a delay before perhaps even the guard or the driver might know about that. So there's mitigations, but if the train's not running on time, the train's not running on time, so we can't deal with that frustration. And obviously one of the interesting things is there's one of the parameters by which a train operating company is measured is customer satisfaction, or CSAT. Yeah. You often find that CSAT might go up or down for a train operating company, and the digital score might go up or down.
Yeah.
And it often has nothing to do with factors around the digital performance of the platform. It's whether there's been snow on the line or there's been a strike or something like that can have just as major an impact. So trying to separate the digital experience from the overall customer experience, you know, is it's not easy to do. And as you say, that's one of the challenges of good service design, is that what we're dealing with here is a multi-channel journey, digital support that, that someone going from A to B and then walking to a restaurant or a cafe is a partly digital journey. They might purchase the ticket online, they might get journey planning online, but actually the train experience and the station experience is just as important. But, you know, there's a lot of things going on here that are driving this dissatisfaction. So, you know, the structural issues with the with the industry. So, you know, we all know about the timetable fiasco from last May, and several of us got obviously recompense on the back of that. And,
yeah,
you know,
just for our non-UK listeners, that was when, what company was it?
Well, there's several, including Govia, Thameslink, Great Northern, etc. Yeah. They launched Northern, they changed the timetables, and it was a massive
carnage,
and basically there's a whole month, 6 weeks of trains just not turning up and being really late. There's a whole compensation scheme that's just finished for that.
Right.
So on the back of that, there's another rail review that's been set up, that's been chaired by Keith Williams, and just to review the whole structure of the industry, because it's not working for passengers. But the other point is passengers don't care about this. It's not working for franchises either.
Yeah.
So, you know, LNER took over Virgin East Coast last year because they couldn't make any money on the on the back of it, so they gave it back to the government. There's delays in new franchise announcements because, again, the government's not necessarily certain what to do. And what you're seeing is this paralysis between sort of transport companies, train operating companies, network, rail, and government, and no one actually having a single responsibility for it. So that means that passengers get a bad deal. But you've got within the industry very complex ticketing and fare structures. You've got a lot of regulation. It's very involved accreditation process. It actually does make it very difficult for an incumbent to be fast and swift to market and responsive. So there are, let's say, excuses, but underlying factors why some of these things happen.
Bringing it back to kind of the discovery work that you've done on this, I guess most people listening will be familiar with kind of doing customer interviews, stuff like that, but I'm guessing for this kind of work it's not just customers you need to understand and get insight on. So how are you both doing and tying together all those different kind of pieces? Okay.
So if we're engaging with a client on a sort of major new initiative, so a program or transformation, as opposed to just doing a new product, although we will do some of this, we'll look at three strands. We'll look at business, experience, and technology. So we do start with the business side of things because we need to understand what the company's overall business strategy is and the role of digital within that, and what they want digital to achieve for them. We need to try and verbalise that. So are they using digital to, for example, try and reduce costs and streamline processes, offer digital self-service to make life easier for themselves? Is it to improve CSAT through a better customer experience, or is it around increasing sales through better e-commerce processes, better fulfilment, and acquiring new customers? So the way we do that is through desk research. We do stakeholder interviews with key people in the business, and we do a number of workshops around different themes, business objectives, content, brand, contact strategy, and we basically turn all that into some tangible key performance indicators, KPIs, and missions, which you can then measure performance post-launch. So that's the one strand. We then almost do a gap analysis against that from an experience point of view. So we'd look at what are the pain points or blockers with the customer against what that company's trying to achieve. So we'd start with data normally. So we'd look at the digital properties and the management information and see how they're being used, where the dropout is, by which customer segments the dropout's happening, at what point are they new existing customers, and then we take that inferred insight, and we, if possible, back that up with dedicated first party research, which could be focus groups or customer interviews, surveys, etc. And then we sanity check that against best practice. So We understand what the customer wants to achieve, and then we go, well, who else in the industry is doing it well, or actually more normally, who else in related industries or related technologies is doing it well, and who can we learn from?
Yep.
And from that, you'll come up with a sort of a roadmap of objectives. Of course, there's then the tech piece, the tech enablement, which is quite often the most involved. So quite often the existing sort of platform or ecosystem isn't fit for purpose, but we don't know that until we start the process.
Yep.
We can't just recommend new platforms or products or services willy-nilly so we have to map the technology that they have currently, what integrations they have, what data points they're using, and then we look at their current operating model to see how that whole system's being managed and run. And from that, we can understand what capabilities they have and whether the technology is fit for purpose for all those objectives and pain points that we've gathered from the other strands. And that requires quite a lot of stakeholder interviews and analysis of the tools themselves. And on the back of that, we'll make recommendations for new target architecture, new suite of tools that might better meet the needs of the train operating company. We'll look at integration, see if you might need new APIs or an API gateway, and we'll develop a target operating model. So we know how they're going to use it in the future and what that looks like.
So, I mean, thinking back to sort of traditional UX, the normal approach, I guess, in the ideal world would be you find out the customer needs and then you basically get or build the technology to enable that. In the real world, that's not quite as simple as I think you've just been describing. So I guess what in your mind comes first, if any, is it the customer need that should be driving like how you integrate with this stuff, or are you starting more from a point of view of this is what we've got technology wise, this is the sort of stuff we could do with that?
Practically, there's always some trade-offs. We, you know, when we look at the technology bit, we always want to create and develop the best technology for the best, you know, price and speed to market that's going to work for the customer. So we're not just going to use what's there for the sake of it, but there's commercial realities in terms of what the client's willing to invest. So you always need to create a business case for any of the investment. Quite often these things don't actually have a budget, or they might have a small budget for a particular product, but not the whole platform or ecosystem. So a lot of this is about showing what uplift is going to be, so therefore boards may want to sign it off. If I was going to say what do we look at first, I'd say that we always look at the business first, because the context of what the customer pain point is has to be in the lens of the business, because you know, this is all about investment, you know, in order for a business to thrive and succeed. There's no point in solving a customer pain point if it's not actually going to support the business and they can't actually grow on the back of it. So we look at the business wants what it wants to achieve, and then look at it through the lens of the customer going, well, if you want to do that, it's not going to work for the customer because of X, Y, or Z. This is what you need to do.
So a lot of our listeners are obviously UX designers, researchers. In terms of kind of the whole process you just described in terms of figuring out what you want to do, where should they be getting involved and what can they contribute to?
Oh, I mean, you know, UX designers at the heart of everything. I know I've talked a lot about tech, but I mean, you know, responsible for some of those teams or have been in the past. Obviously, we used to work together, you know, UX design and the customer experience strategies at the heart of all this, because how those digital tools and processes work and how they interact is key for them being taken up and used, and the customer having a great experience. So there's all sorts of ways in terms of how UX designers or you know, experienced architects can get involved in all this. You know, obviously you need to vision and prototype the future, but our experienced designers get involved in the customer interviews. They get involved in some of the benchmarking and looking at competitors. The thing I always say is that the key to all this is context. Mm-hmm. Unless you understand the business and the industry and what it's trying to do, then it's not going to work.
Yep.
Purist UX theory, as much as purist tech theory, doesn't work without understanding what the problem is that you're trying to solve. So that's the thing I'd always say.
Yep.
Becoming an expert in the business, more of an expert than the people that you're working for, is absolutely crucial.
Mm-hmm. So we talked a little bit about data and like different points you can get that from. Can you talk a bit about, like, I suppose how you use data to measure your solution and how well it's doing, but also how you use it to, I suppose, inform what you're designing before you release it as well? So kind of pre and post launch, how data works. Yeah. That's it.
So we're very data focused as a business. I'd say my motto is that, you know, if it's measurable, capture it. So as I said just now, a lot of the programs that we've developed don't initially have funding in place, so they need a business case. So you need the data around the performance of the platform to actually help you measure and prove uplift or create scenarios that can be signed off. So that means that we need to look at doing ROI modeling, return on investment modeling around sales, CSAT, engagement, acquisition. So the starting point for data analytics is always your key digital tools like Google Analytics, in which you're seeing what the digital sales are, what the conversion rate is, what the average transaction value is, where that's coming from, what acquisition channels, how that differs. And then we can look at, for example, different booking funnel dropouts contextually.
Yep.
So we can then say, well, if we go and do these things, you're going to get X amount of uplift.
Yeah.
Now, as well as using the standard tools, if we've already owned the platform, we're running the platform, we'll have some quite heavy configuration with the data. So you won't just have standard Google Analytics, we'll be measuring events, we'll be doing event sequence tracking, all that type of stuff, so we can actually look at how different elements in the page are working or not working.
Yeah.
And then we'll back it up with on-site survey tools and session replay tools, Decibel Insights and session cams, that type of stuff. Then when we look at an area of dropout, we can look at the individual use cases that may be causing it.
Is there any way to kind of cross-reference that sort of stuff with what's happening offline? So, like, are you looking for stuff like, if a particular train is late, is that causing a spike in people rebooking tickets and stuff like that? Do you have that way of kind of cross-referencing things?
You can on some occasions. I mean, it sort of depends upon the sophistication of the train operating company and how much investment they want to make, but some of that is possible. So for some of the train operating companies, you know, within the URL strings, etc., you've got station codes, so you can actually see which journeys are driving which revenue, whether it's by new or returning customers. You can look at how many visits before transaction, how soon before transaction they visited the site, etc. For some of the companies we work with, we either run or one of our sister agencies will have access to the customer database or customer information, so you can then look at general segmentation and overlay Acorn data and then look at propensity to buy a first or second class ticket. Mm. So all of that's possible. It just depends upon the sophistication of the client and how much time and effort they want to put into that.
Mm-hmm. So one of the reasons I was kind of keen to do this as a topic is because when a lot of people are learning UX or research design, whatever, they think of it, right, I need to make an app and, I need to research and design stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm interested to understand a bit more about how designing for an app or a product like a website is different to designing for a whole kind of platform, essentially, as you described.
Okay. So, wow. Okay, so there's a lot of different things here, but if you put it really simply, a platform is a whole suite of products and services that sits within one ecosystem, which is tied together.
Yep.
So that means that all of those things need to share the same data, whether that's customer identity or journey and fare information, purchase information. and they need to be able to share those and show those simultaneously across a bunch of different touch points, like a website or an app, and they need to be managed by the same internal team as well, mm-hmm. back at the client. So that means A, it's a lot more complicated. B, you can't really envisage it as a standalone thing. You have to think about those other touch points and interactions as well. And you also have to think about the integrations, because you might be showing data that comes from a lot of different providers in one interface. So what that means is that you need quite a multifaceted team to deliver it. So when a UX is thinking about this, they might think about what's a great interface for an app. Oh, so-and-so does a great app interface, but you've almost got to think about, well, what is it that we're trying to achieve here? Is it around journey planning? Yeah. If I'm using an app, well, it might be a different customer who's a loyal customer as opposed to the website. You might be a first-time customer, so their needs are different. It's the same data being shown, but you might want to show it a different sequence or a different order.
I guess the experience you're going to have on a self-serve ticket machine is going to be a lot different.
Exactly. So, a UX designer or a UX strategist or experience strategist is one of a whole number of people within a team that's helped visualizing the future, but then it's about how does that future enable. So, because it's this complicated beast, you've got program leads and project managers, you've got subject matter experts around digital business technology experience, and those people would help deliver the scope and the roadmap. And then in terms of sort of more detailed definition, you're going to need a combination of business analysis, technical analysts, data analysts, experienced designers, and then front and back end dev, which might be on native, app, mobile, web, etc., etc. So you've got a whole bunch of people which could be working across time zones. So some of our clients might have a team of 20 or 30,
right?
And that's just us or our partners that we're working with. That doesn't take into account the client team as well. So they might have a product owner who's responsible for the product roadmap, a sponsor, sort of commercial sponsor. They've got their own governance, and then you've got other internal teams. They might have their own BI or MI that needs to work with that. They might have their own call center or customer service that you've got to integrate with. So that means your governance process has got to be really, really strong.
Yeah, and I suppose from an experience point of view, it's not going to be just one designer working on the whole platform. So there needs to be that governance in place to make sure it all hangs together and ties together.
Exactly. You have brand designers who are coming up with a suite of assets and components and approaches that can cross every touch point. Then you'll have your interaction designers, which obviously you'll have specialists that work on app versus web. You also got to think about content as well. So we'll have content people who may be looking at search engine optimization, but also they'll be crossing over into IA and structure, content structure as well. So there's a lot of interaction. Quite often we have our clients, they could be on, when we're building these things, be on the premises two or three times a week. It's their much sort of collaborative process, and they're sitting in our offices or we're over there.
Yeah. So it's before we sort of wrap up, I guess as part of your discovery, you've been looking at how other countries and other companies do trains, and I'm sure almost all of them are better than we do it, by and large. Is there anything special that other countries are doing that just results in an overall better experience for customers, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, there's other companies or countries in Europe that have a more user-friendly, simpler digital experiences. So, we're always doing benchmarking. For example, Netherlands Rail is quite nice in terms of how it combines journey planning and purchase, as we, by SNCF and SJ, Swedish Rail, they've got quite nice, elegant e-commerce processes, for example. There's loads of others. But part of that better CX, customer experience, is partly a fact that the whole way that pricing and ticketing and fares works is a lot simpler in Europe than in the UK. And there's less options. They've taken into account cross-border as well, because they sometimes have to go across Europe. So it's a lot simpler to create an interface, because there's less things to consider. you also have to think that some of these countries have train operators that are totally or semi-state owned.
Yeah.
So they haven't got to think about being in competition with each other around different routes or lines, which some of our train operating companies
right.
are. Whilst we look at other countries' digital experiences, we also look at other industries as well for leads. So, you know, many customers now would compare buying a train ticket to compare buying an airline ticket. So you might want to compare the purchase and fulfillment experience you get with EasyJet. If you're a metro or an urban dweller, then you know you might be used to using tools like Google or CityMapper, you'd expect that level of service or interaction. Once a tool becomes part of the everyday, like Uber, then you tend to find that a lot of those customers will expect the same type of CX approach, all that sort of interface language.
Yep.
That you want to replicate. So,
it'd be nice if you could just summon a train from an app, wouldn't it?
Well, you know, this is the interesting thing. So I think, you know, what's the final challenge, or what's the biggest challenge for the train industry? And I think, you know, obviously, apart from trains being on time, the biggest thing that a train company could do is you know, have that ability to plan, manage and buy a multimodal trip from a single interface in a frictionless way, so actually work the way that a
yep.
customer expects. So that means incorporating a bus, a walk mm-hmm. into your journey calculations, recommending what the cheapest or quickest option is based on that. It also means automatically charging the passenger the cheapest fare at points or after travel, which means that you then have to move into account-based ticketing and recognising you or me when we get on and off the train. So we're currently working on some of that with some of our transport clients, but they're not the easiest things to do, and it's a lot of moving parts.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously it happens in London with TfL, but outside metro areas it's still difficult.
Yeah.
So the challenge for train operating companies, for TOCs, is if they don't offer that in the future, they're in danger of getting bypassed by companies or technology providers that can do that. So if you think about Google, most people start their journey search with Google.
Yeah.
Think about Uber in London, it's just launched the ability that you can see and plan public transport into your journey as well as taxis.
Mm-hmm.
In Denver, not only can you do that, you can actually buy that public transport as well as your taxi within the single
right, yeah.
option. Okay. Now, you think Uber's got something like, 500 million users worldwide, it might be more than that. Once that facility becomes commonplace around different towns and cities, then customers will migrate to
yeah.
those providers, which then means that for a train operating company, you become a constituent brand. Someone's not going to go and visit your website,
yeah, yeah.
they're going to visit Uber instead. So the thing for TOCs now, I think, is they've got to think of themselves potentially as
TOCs, big train operating companies.
Yeah, train yep. operating companies, they have to think of themselves potentially as not just being a brand, but a constituent brand of a
yep.
of a multimodal journey, and opening up their data, their fares, their information to other technology providers, so they're always there, they're always
yep.
an option,
mm-hmm.
which has a lot of implications in terms of their brand, but means that they probably open themselves up to more potential customers and makes them easier to deal with.
Do you think passengers care about train brands? Like,
no.
do they have any
no.
sort of affinity to them?
I mean, to a certain extent, depending on the train company and the line, there are some local affinities in some areas, but for most commuters,
you've got to get what you've got to get, right?
You're, to a certain extent, you're a captive customer, so it's all about good service.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I think that was kind of all I had for trains, unless there's anything
no,
else you'd like to
very,
talk about.
That was very thorough, and
your
you've tested my knowledge.
Have you got a favourite train?
What, as in a physical train?
Yeah.
I mean, I quite like the new carriages that they've got on my Thames Link and Great Northern services now. I think they're pretty decent, but I can't get a seat in the morning, so I don't get
That's
to sit
the,
on
yeah,
them.
Same
so,
old issues.
Yeah,
they're so, nice to stand in.
They're nice to stand in. So for me, like every other customer, it's about being on time, having somewhere nice to sit, having
yep.
Wi-Fi that works, and getting home when I told my wife I was going to.
Cool. Is there anything you want to plug in terms of any talks you're doing or any blogs you've written around this subject?
Got loads of blogs and pieces. Our founder, Peter Goff, recently did a piece with Hack Train, which is worth looking at. We're always producing blogs and insights around trains, so go to the ORM website or the ORM LinkedIn profile and you'll see a load of stuff there written by me, some of my colleagues, various interviews, which is, if you're into trains, is quite interesting. We also get involved in buses as well, so there's a blog piece that I did with the guys from Arriva Bus after the recent sort of annual sort of bus conference.
Which, weirdly, I have attended as well in a previous
it's
life.
It's true, so you know what it's like. Yeah.
Cool. Well, we'll put all of those links in the show notes anyway, great, so people can check that out. So thanks very much for joining
us. Thanks for your time.
Bye.
Let's have a coffee.
Search and subscribe to Design Untangled using your favourite podcast app and leave us a review. Follow us on the web at designuntangled.co.uk or on Twitter at designuntangled. Become a better designer with online mentoring at uxmentor.me.